pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos. No good. 1 second. It's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.
Hello. Welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We are back with Shocker basketball graduate manager Kellen Marshall. Talk some more about the Shockers. Hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find more Wichita State athletics content at GoShockers.com underneath the Roundhouse. Thank you. We have Kellen Marshall, graduate manager for the Wichita State basketball team. He's back for our second conversation. This conversation started a couple weeks ago. It's all based off a March 2019 list of top 50 wins under Greg Marshall. That was prompted by his 300th win as Wichita State coach. Kellen has some thoughts on this. We did a podcast a couple weeks ago where we re-ranked some of his favorite wins and talked about them. Today we're going to look at some other games. Let's start. Kellen, tell the people a little bit about what you do as a graduate manager. I think people are always interested in what are all those people in suits doing over on that bench. What's your day like? What do you do as graduate manager?
Well, Paul, I have a unique role with my relationship with my dad, obviously, to where sometimes I get put on special tasks, people that come in or take care of somebody. Hey, someone's coming in to visit, like a high up booster or something like that. And so they'll throw me on to take care of that. But as far as practice and games go and practice, I observe practice and, always happy to help after practice. Guys get shots up. Guys look to me for advice about their game. I think one of my most important roles that's not really a defined role is just being a bridge between the players and the coaching staff. I think my age, and helps me be able to relate to the team. But at the same time, my mindset and what I've seen growing up is so much of a coach's mindset to where I can kind of, break down the barrier between how different that players and coaches think. Players don't always have the mindset of a coach, and if they do, they end up being very successful. During games, my main role is to watch the other team's coach or point guard or anybody really who could call plays out, mainly offense, but also sometimes defenses, and then translate to what we would call it or what we have been calling it. A lot of teams run the same type of action, so it's easy to translate, and I can quickly, say what's coming. Or, we go over stuff in scouting reports where we may not run this, but we have a term we've used for the past couple of days as we've gone over it. So that's I'm kind of like a little spy, over there, if you will. It's a fun job. I've done it for 4 years now, actually, during games. So coaches get used to seeing me and they try to fake me out. They will signal something and then cover their mouth and verbal something else to the point guard. Kelvin Sampson is one of the best at that. He gets me a lot, but it does help us give an advantage, gets an idea, because different actions call for different coverages. If you see certain things like something we call a Tulsa offense, then we guard the ball screen differently because the offense is looking to run a quick ball screen, swing to the other big, and that guy that set the first ball screen is just slipping hard, and they go big to big and try to catch our bigs hedging. So there's all kind of things like that it's important to kind of know what's coming if possible so we can tweak and adjust to guard the way that we scouted it.
I'm glad you mentioned that about Houston coach Kelvin Sampson. I was going to ask, so there is misinformation, disinformation going back and forth. People try to throw you off the track then, I guess.
For sure. And some coaches, they don't care. Like they say, we run so much that You know, I can hear them say reverse five, but out of the reverse five package or whatever they call it, they have 10 different wrinkles. So I may be able to get the yell, the main action out, but it doesn't always help. A funny little story. This is probably the coolest moment of my career thus far. We're playing at UConn this year, and Tyson's godfather, Marcus Camby, is just to the right of our bench. He's in between the UConn bench and our bench, two rows up, and he sees what I'm doing. And he's, you know, we've gotten to know each other for a couple months to this point, and he hears with about 5 minutes to go, Coach Hurley yell something out, and he goes, "Kellen, Kellen," and he yelled it out, and you know, I had a number one draft pick help me do my job. It was probably the coolest thing that's ever happened to me for what I do. So it was really neat. And he's, you know, you could just see that he is a high level competitor, and he wants to help win any way that he can, trying to help Tyson win, help us win. So it was a cool moment for sure.
Yeah. Explain Marcus Camby's relationship with Tyson Etienne. Unfortunately, people have seen him around, but maybe don't know.
So from what I understand, Tyson's dad, Max, and Marcus play together. I believe so, growing up. So they know each other somehow. I know Max played at Maryland, I believe, and Marcus played at UMass, but they're friends. So he probably came to, 20 of our games last year, you know, and he's around. He's just a super nice guy, you know, very down to earth, not at all like, you know, me, as you would, you know, maybe think a top pick and great NBA player would be. Just a cool dude, you know, helps Tyson a lot, gives him sound advice. You know, he knows what it's like to do everything Tyson's doing, and he's done it at a high level. So it's definitely a blessing for Tyson to have someone like that so close to him as well.
When did you kind of get hooked by coaching and start to get serious about it?
I would say maybe back in my freshman year of high school. And some of my rationale through the years of why I wanted to do certain things doesn't really make any sense. But I remember when I was a freshman in high school, I really thought it was cool that my dad got to wear sweatpants and a sweatsuit every day. He didn't have to dress fancy, you know, for work on a day-to-day basis. So I thought that was great. Your options are kind of limited if you're going to work, you know, in sweats. But then, you know, it just comes naturally to me. And as I got older, I just gravitated more to the coaching side and seeing all the little nooks and crannies of coaching, if you will. And it fits me. It's what I love to do. I have a serious passion for it. I love practice every day. I love competing. You know, I'm a very competitive person, and those competitive juices, they always get me going. So coaching is just a natural fit for me and what I, you know, am good at, I think.
And you just finished your first year in the MBA program, correct?
Correct.
Why do you add that to the coaching experience? How do you see that helping you in the future?
Well, I didn't want to do sport management for undergrad or master's, just because I wanted to keep more of a broad path potentially for myself. You know, if I don't end up coaching, you know, I have a little business background, and you know, as most people in business will tell you, it's, you just get the basics, you know, in college, and a lot of the learning is on the job. But you know, people told me that if you have an MBA and you decide you want to move from coaching to, you know, maybe you're in the MBA somehow and you get in the front office, you know, having that business background does help. So that's just some advice I'd gotten from people that I know and trust and respect that are, you know, high level coaches, or they work for MBA teams or anything like that. So it was kind of a guided decision by people that are around me. And the MBA program at Wichita State is kicking my butt. It's hard. I've been, the last couple of weeks I've been studying during quarantine. So I'm glad to have it all wrapped up for year one. And hopefully by next year this time, I'll be a master's graduate as well.
What was your favorite class?
In undergrad?
No, in the MBA.
Oh, in MBA. Oh, gosh. Let's see. I only took like 6 classes this year. It shouldn't be too hard to think of them. I did enjoy this international business class that I just took online. It was only like 8 weeks, but it just so happened that, you know, studying international business, we took a company. My group chose Anheuser-Busch for whatever reason. Good people like to drink a beer, I guess. But anyway, we looked at how the coronavirus and COVID-19 is affecting Anheuser-Busch, what they're doing, strengths and weaknesses on financial issues and marketing issues and their response. So it was just a very applicable and relevant real world learning atmosphere to kind of put yourself in the shoes of a company like that. So I enjoyed that a lot. And I think I learned a lot from it, even though it was only an 8-week course.
Let's get to the basketball. Last time, like I said, we looked at the 50 games and moved some of them around. Now Kellen's going to give us a look at some other games that were part of the 300 that his dad won at Wichita State, but didn't make my list of the top 50. So Kellen, I will give you the floor. Which games would you like to talk about inclusion in that list?
Yeah, and these games, you know, they're not up there with our top 10 or anything like that, but when you think about spots 47, 48, 49, 50, you know, these definitely, I think, deserve some consideration. One of them is a combo. It's two games that had a very similar ending. You'll have to think all the way back to the 08-09 season when I was a 6th grader, and my buddy Teray Murray hit back-to-back game-winning shots off the same play, I believe. 32 Vini, you know, works like a charm. And that was huge because we started off 0-6 in the league. I think my dad's league record after 25 games was 4-21. And then from then on, he had a crazy record. It was like 130-18. So those were some turning points, you know. You don't win those games. The team maybe never gets momentum. You know, that third year, we go 25-10 and got better and better. And it just all built up to the string of success that we had. And those shots were huge.
I will refresh the memories. The first game was WSU 51, Evansville 50. Teray hit the game-winning three with 8 seconds to play. Assist to Clevin Hanna. And then Wichita State 62, Missouri State 61. Murray again with the game-winning three. 5 seconds to play, again from Clevin Hanna, scored. At that point, it was a career-high 23 for Teray. So you're saying those were both the same play?
I would have to go back and watch the Evansville game because I haven't seen that one in a long time. But I did see the clip of the Missouri State one, and it was Vini. It was one of our bread and butter plays, named after a guy named Keith Vini. My dad coached at Marshall, I think. This is when I was a baby. But I'm pretty sure he set the NCAA record for threes in a game. He had like 15 or so. It was crazy. The guy was a real shooter. So when you set an NCAA record for threes, we'll name a play after you, I guess.
Yeah, play named after you. Both of those were comeback wins. The Shockers were down to Missouri State 56-50. And then they trailed Evansville 49-42 with 2:44 remaining before working their way back. And Teray hit both of those shots. Now, those both came after the game that a lot of people talk about that season, the blackout victory over Creighton that stopped that 0-6 Valley start. Do you remember that game as well?
I do remember that game. That was I had my shirt forever. It was a cool shirt. Black with just the yellow eyes of Wooshock on it. I remember you couldn't tell that Creighton was the preseason favorite and we were 0-6 if you just watched the tape of that game. I mean, we physically imposed our will. I remember at least once, if not twice, Creighton players left the game with bloody noses. I remember Harriman's, I don't remember the 32 was his number. I don't remember his first name. Casey Harriman.
Casey, yes.
Yeah, he left with a bloody nose. That was awesome. And we just dominated them, punked them a little bit, and the crowd was a humongous factor. And you know, credit the Shocker fans, because I can't think of more than maybe three or four places in the country where a team that's lost six in a row, including the sixth loss, was against a team that was also 0-5 in the league. And they just whooped us. I think it was Missouri State, might have been Northern Iowa, one of those two. Anyway, we come back and the crowd is just revved up, ready to go. Nothing like a good hatred for Creighton to get the Shocker fans to come together and help us get a big momentum starting win.
Those games were battles with Creighton. I got you off track there, because that Creighton game, I think, was in the top 50. But so yeah, we'll get back on track. All right, we got the two Terray Murray game winners. Where do we go next?
We'll go chronologically. We'll go to a big game in a city of Wichita's history, the first college basketball game at Intrust Bank Arena against Tulsa. David Kiles hit at least four threes in the first. I think one was a two. I think one was ruled a two. And he came out just blazing, smoking hot, on fire. It was a great game. And the Tulsa had a shot to win. We may have blocked it. They lost. That was 82-79 final. After the game, Garrett Stutz, in his typical jovial fashion, has a big red jacket in his backpack. And he puts it on, and he puts on a Santa hat and puts a pillow under the jacket. It was right before Christmas break. It was like December 22nd or something like that. So everyone was going home, and he pretended to be Santa Claus. It was a very happy locker room and, you know, just a huge game. Started off a great winning streak at Intrust Bank Arena that went five or six years. I know Juwan Evans and Oklahoma State put an end to that, but awesome game. Great memory.
2010-11 season, 82-79, as you said, the first college basketball game at Intrust Bank Arena. Garrett, 20 points, and David Kiles, yes, he was on fire. 19 points for the game. He had five threes on nine attempts. So one of the definitely David Kiles highlight. What game is next?
Next up is a game that brings my roommate and one of our current managers a lot of heartache. The 2014-15 season, Fred and Ron's junior year, Tekel and Darius were seniors. Evan Wessel rolls his ankle. It's the Alabama game. Dick Vitale was on the call. First time having Dickie V in the building, I believe, at least in a long time. And the game was slow. They had a couple guys, a couple bigs. Jimmy Taylor was one. I think Shannon Hale was the other. He was a pick and pop, either him or Michael Kessens. They had a couple of guys that were similar to me in my brain, but you know, we couldn't score. They had, you know, some elite length and athleticism, as the SEC often does. And I think the score was like 51-40 or 52-41 with like 5 minutes to go. And we finished the game on a 12-1 run. Capped off by Fred's nifty little bounce pass to Darius for the dunk. They miss a shot, and the ball goes out of bounds over by across from their bench with 1 second to go. Retton Obasahan, I think, gets the inbound pass and misses, either him or Randolph. I don't remember all the names, but I know they threw it in. Get a shot up, and as it's coming back down, you know, the buzzer had gone off and the game was over. I think Ron Baker just punched the ball as it's coming back down like he was, you know, doing a dig in volleyball, just crushes it. I've never seen Ron show that much emotion ever. And if you go back and look that game up, there are some awesome, awesome pictures on Google. I mean, just one of the most electric atmospheres in the history of Coke Arena at the end of the game. The whole game was a little touch and go, but the end was awesome. Dickie Vega on the call, he goes, "Oh, Heartbreak Hotel over the Crimson Tide. I can't believe it. A great comeback by the Shockers." You know, so he was hamming it up. And if you guys are bored and find that one on the internet, give it a watch. At least the last 5 minutes, it'll make your day.
Always a big deal when you get Dick Vitale in the building. That was So we have the 2014-15 season, 53-52. Darius Carter dunks with 11 seconds to go. He had 16 in the game. Ron Baker, 14. Nice to get an SEC team in Coke Arena, and even better to come away with the victory.
Yep, absolutely. Next on my list is this game is a great game. It was fun, but it was followed by one of the worst heartbreaks in regular season history that I can remember. The Marquette win in the semifinals of Maui. I put this one in consideration because I think, you know, Maui is a very historic tournament. It's prestigious. Even being in it is an honor. And to make the championship game and defeat a proud program with good players. Marcus Howard was a sophomore. Andrew Rousey was really good, the transfer from UNC Asheville. They had some good guards, and it was a good game. It was tight. It was tighter than the final score, and there were some awesome plays. I know you guys will probably remember Richard's double block, the chase down, and then guy gets the rebound, and he goes and swats it again. I remember Austin Reeves had a really awesome spinning layup in traffic. And then something that you guys probably don't know, my dad told me this story. He said they got a bucket. Marquette gets a bucket, and Wojo like slaps the floor on defense, you know, on the sidelines. I mean, that was like, that's kind of weird. So we come down and we run one of our UCLA series play, which is just the inbound of the wing. And the first option is a cut right off the big man off the elbow. He sets a screen at the elbow. And Landry was so good at being able to catch it off that screen and just lay it in. So we literally make one pass. Landry comes off Shaq's screen, layup right back. And my dad slapped the floor right back. So that's the kind of stuff that, you know, as a competitor, you love. And you love when your plays work, of course. It's like a little chess match or a game of battleship or whatever you want to call it. But that was a cool story. I remember that happening. And, you know, advancing to the Maui final was a big deal. Like I said, a huge historic tournament. The way that tournament ended will haunt me for a long time. It was tough. That was a really, really somber locker room. Guys were multiple guys in tears. It means a lot to win Maui, and you know, we could have had our names on there forever. So, but getting there was exciting. So I think that game deserves some inclusion.
That was a good one, Maui. Yeah, it's such history there. You're exactly right. That was Shockers were ranked sixth at the time. They beat Marquette 80-66. Landry Shamet had 19. Connor Francamp had 13. And I think on YouTube you can find that double block sequence by Rashard Kelly. That was really was a couple great hustle plays there by Rashard.
It's also on Nick Jones's I think breakdown of Rashard's game. If you guys haven't seen Nick's what he's been doing on Twitter, he's been putting together some of the Shocker greats and some guys who are more role players too, and just kind of highlighting the things that each person did that makes them great. You know, in an effort to show that you don't have to be a high-level scorer or the big name to have an impact. So it's a cool series that he did. He spent hours upon hours clipping that up and putting it together. So I think his Twitter handle is Nick Jones WSU. But anyway, give Nick a look and a follow and check that stuff out if you haven't had a chance.
Yeah, that's been really entertaining. I would advise everybody to take a look. It's at Nick_Jones WSU, and he's done Trey Murray, Fred Van Vliet, Rashard Kelly, Shaquille Morris, a lot of interesting stuff. All right, where do we go next?
Well, the last one, pre-300, it was very similar to that Creighton game in a way, not as big of a matchup as far as a rivalry thing, but we were 1-6 in the American, Marcus's senior year with Smaje, and that team was really struggling. I mean, wounded, beaten down, had just gotten just pummeled by UConn. One of the lowest feelings ever is just getting beat down like that. Doesn't happen a lot to us, but it does happen. And the team was able to pick itself up off the mat and win a high-scoring game with SMU, 85-83, if I remember correct. And Samaje, at the end of the game, just comes down and slices through the defense, going right to left, and makes a ridiculously hard left-handed spinning layup off the glass. What's so funny is, you know, the next day we come in and we have a light practice before another game, and I think it was Tulsa coming up, and Samaje did the move 5 or 6 straight times like it was nothing. He was like, guys, that shot's not that hard. Just watch. And he just throws it up there. Lefties have just an extra gift of touch on layups and stuff around the rim. So great game, great finish. Probably the first true buzzer beater that I can really remember, where like shot goes up and basically that's the end of the game. So that was pretty awesome.
January 30th, 2019, 85-83, Samaje, according to the play-by-play, scored with a second remaining. And he kind of had a Tre Murray flashback that season, because he also had the game winner to beat Connecticut later, a few games later. So,
and that's a good segue into the next group of games that we're going to do, right? It's the games that happened post-win 300, right?
Sure. I love segues. So keep rolling. These are games that after your dad had won 300, these are the ones that come up next, which would essentially be 2018-19 postseason and this past season.
Correct. And you know, there were some surefire games that would be on the list from that postseason. The segue doesn't work perfectly because before I talk about the Clemson game and Samaje's huge shot against Clemson, I have to mention the Furman game. Just getting in the NIT was so exciting. I remember my family watching in the living room at my parents' house, and you know, we didn't know if we were going to get in, and we pop up and, you know, we're going back to South Carolina, 45 minutes, maybe an hour from where my dad grew up, in Greenwood, South Carolina, and Furman's in Greenville, or as they say in South Carolina, Greenville. Anyway, we play Furman, and Bob Ritchie, and they're well coached, and they run a really tough offense to defend, a lot of back cuts. Lou Godino put a great scout together, changed our defense strategy. Instead of in being in normal denial, we played one gap below. So instead of being on the side, we're face on with our man, but we have one hand denying just to prevent the back cut. So it worked. We held them to 70 points. You know, that's including some garbage time free throws and whatnot. And it was my dad's 500th win as a coach for his career. That one was very, very special, very emotional. I remember as kind of time ticked away and I realized what had happened, you know, it was just special. I was very happy and thankful that I got to be there for it, because knowing where he was at going into my freshman year, he was at 398. And I was like, I want to be there for 500, because that's been a big goal of his, 500 wins. And getting to do it in front of both of his parents, able to make the trip, brothers and cousins and, you know, family and friends from Rock Hill, South Carolina came down. It was kind of a culmination of an awesome career to that point, to get to have that win be in front of so many people that, you know, he knows and we all know and love and care about. So Furman was very special, and it led right into a very weird travel situation. We go home for like 2 days, went to class for 1 day, and then fly right back to Greenville, because Clemson is only like 20 minutes from Greenville. It's like a suburb of Greenville, and stay in the same hotel. I still don't know why we left, but that's fine. And we play Clemson. We're really just giving them the business. Jamie was electric. He had like 16 first half points. Dominated the matchup with Elijah Thomas, I believe was his name. And then we start turning it over. We can't handle pressure. Well, who bails us out but Samaje? He took they had a guy, number 24, I think was his number, and he's guarding Samaje late clock, maybe just over a minute to go. It's a 3-point game. Samaje gives him a little between, a little hesitation, and he pulls up, and nothing but the bottom of the net, puts us up six, kind of ices the game, forgives us of all of our turnovers against the pressure. JB, I'm sure, was thankful for that one. He didn't have his finest moment in that game, but we survive and move on to my favorite game in my whole life as far as being a part of the team. Kansas and Gonzaga all happened when I was still in high school. But playing at Indiana was unbelievable experience. It was almost a spiritual experience as a, someone who appreciates basketball and the history. And the architecture of Assembly Hall is just incredible. The end zones almost come out to a point at you. It looks like if you were standing on the, in the middle of the court facing one of the end zones, it's like you were standing in front of a cruise ship. You know how the cruise ship kind of comes to a point, if you can imagine that. Anyway, incredible atmosphere, maybe 12,000 fans for an NIT game. The entire bottom is filled. The arena feels more like a theater than a basketball stadium. It was just the coolest thing ever. And we played really well. We weathered the storm, multiple runs. Dexter hit five threes. And we got out of there with a 73-63 win. I'm sitting here in my kitchen looking at the newspaper from the sports page that day. It's myself and my dad and Coach Smith celebrating that one. So those all three would be on the list, in my opinion, and Indiana would be way up there. It was awesome.
Just that amazing. Was a special trip. People really seemed to enjoy that. I think a lot of people got a tour of Assembly Hall, which obviously is really a prominent building in college basketball history. So let me update. Let's see. So that was 76-70, Wichita State beat Furman to start three road games in the NIT. Then they beat Clemson 63-55. And then the 73-63 win at Indiana.
Yep.
Dexter Dennis had 17 points, 14 of those in the second half. And so what we could really see that team coming together during that NIT run. What were you seeing from the practices and so forth?
You know, as we started winning, and it all started with Samaje's shot, really, against SMU. That kind of got us going and got us believing. You know, we beat Tulsa, and, you know, we start winning games. I think we finished 9-2 to end the league. Now, we had some easier games. You know, our schedule was slated a little easier on the back half, but the team started to believe in what we were teaching. We never – it's not like we became this – you know, offensive juggernaut. We just bought into having to defend and rebound and do the things that are trademarks of this program. What I think was really cool was that we, as you know, the coaching staff also figured out different breakdown offenses to run with different personnel in, and we finally put guys in spots where they were at their best. We ran a lot of follow five, which is our main ball screen offense, with four guys out and a five man screening side to side. Asbjorn was really good at that. He was a great ball screener. Samaje stayed on the right wing so he could go left because we knew he was better going left and not as good going right. And JB or Ricky or whoever else would get on that left wing and come off, you know, going left to right. And we figured that stuff out, and we got Dexter and Marcus in the corner so they can roll up and shoot that roll up three. And it worked to perfection. It bailed us out time and time again in the NIT run. I remember Dexter hit at least two or three roll up threes that game. You know, and you have to credit the seniors. Marcus and Samaje never wavered. You know, they were pushed and they were challenged, and they had to really struggle to lead those guys because they're not, you know, they hadn't been called upon to lead, but the personality of those guys, their positive spirit, it had helped the team stay uplifted through some tough times. And then beyond that, you know, we had a real goal in mind once we made the NIT, and that was to take Marcus home to New York. And that was kind of our rallying cry. Once we got there, you know, we forgot how to score, but it was really special to get Marcus to Madison Square Garden, and anytime you play in Madison Square Garden, I don't care if it's for a charity event, it's just amazing. Walking in that arena, I mean, there's a reason it's the most famous in the world.
It was a good experience, definitely. That NIT run was a lot of fun. Took Wichita State to some good places, definitely. What's next on your list?
Okay, I have a few more, and they all come from this past season. I think, you know, these kind of go hand in hand. But the Oklahoma State one on the road, anytime you go in and beat a Big 12 team on the road, especially in the fashion that we did, you know, being up 29 at one point, that was kind of our statement that, okay, you know, we're here, we bounced back from the West Virginia game, learned our lesson of kind of getting out tough, and we took it to them. It was awesome. Tyson hit 5 threes. And then to come back six days later, it was a Sunday to Saturday, 8th to the 14th, and play Oklahoma and get to play Austin. He's back in Wichita. You know, that was a huge deal. I know a lot of guys, even if they didn't really know Austin, they took it personally, and they wanted to win the matchup. You know, they had Eric and Tyson kind of were looked at as Austin's replacement, and, you know, give Eric credit. He balled out, especially in the first half. You know, but they were hard to guard. Christian Doolittle was unreal. Brady Manick, whenever he sees Wichita State, decides that he is going to be Larry Bird reincarnate. I watch other games where he goes like 0-for-8, and I just, you know, I say some bad words under my breath because I just am like, dude, why don't you miss those shots against us? But anyway, the meat of that game is what was so amazing. You know, the environment that we had kind of been waiting for all year, because early in the year, the crowds weren't as great as we were used to, and there were kind of some lower-level teams that we played, you know, not the big names, and people weren't as excited. Well, that Oklahoma game at Intrust Bank Arena got it going. It was the Grant Sherfield show. He stole the show. We weren't even really running anything. It just run down, and Jamie would set like a little drag ball screen, and Grant just went to work. Just electric. I don't know how else to describe that sequence. We went from 48-56 and went on a 12-0 run to go up 60-56. They called two timeouts during that time. I didn't do anything but just jump up and down and yell as loud as I could. They took the lead back, actually, and then somehow or another, I'd have to go back and watch, we ended up winning. We make a ton of key free throws down the stretch, almost turn it over. It was wild, but we got out of there, and the OU game was sweet. It was sweet for a lot of reasons.
Shockers 80, Oklahoma 75. As you mentioned, Eric Stevenson had a good game, 16 points, made 4 of 7 threes. Grant Sherfield had 14. And one of the things that stuck out about both that and the Oklahoma State game was rebounding. Shockers out-rebounded OU 48-31 and had 15 second-chance points. They had 23 second-chance points against Oklahoma State in an 80-61 win. So those were two games where Wichita State's rebounding ability really, really was important and really came to the forefront.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I think Trey and Dex kind of led the charge there. I know Jamie was doing his thing rebounding, but Trey and Dex are kind of getting a little Tekel Cotton in them, where they're coming up with timely offensive rebounds in big games. And, you know, we worked with Trey a lot last year during the year with getting better at being able to rebound it and then stick it back in the square and score, you know, because he would get up there and rebound, but he's really not much over 6'5" and a half, 6'6". So he has to really get his second jump going to where he can finish, and he got better. And he and Dex are both continuing to get better as rebounders, which helps us a lot when you're not so dependent on just one guy to really give you a presence on the offensive glass. Other wins that stuck out, you know, the VCU win was way hyped going into it. They were 25 in the country, and it was kind of a let's get ranked game. They fell off. It was disappointing kind of to see them fall off. But, you know, you can't coach their team, and they just didn't do what they thought they were going to do after being so good the year before. Clearly, no doubt about it, this game makes the list, which is Memphis. That game was super hyped, whether they lost to Georgia or not, for the conference race, you know, the trash talk, Penny giving us multiple slights. You know, I still remember, I can hear the words in my head right now. and we were ready to go. That was another electric Shocker blackout. I don't think the Shocker fans have any love lost for Memphis either. Neither does our team. And it was just a beatdown. I mean, getting up 19 on the kickout three to Eric. I mean, that was maybe as loud as this place has ever been. You know, they did cut it to six. You know, it's hard to keep the foot on the gas when you're up that much, but it was a thorough win, much like their win over us at later in the year. You know, we split with them, which is about right. They're pretty evenly matched teams. And the Memphis game was enormous and was followed by a game that, you know, I think a lot of Shocker fans may disagree with me on this, because watching it as a fan of the Shockers, it was surely frustrating. But UConn this year was awesome. I was actually going over this list with my roommate, my buddy Austin, and I was saying, yeah, how I think this UConn game should be on the list. And he was like, really? I hated that game. I said, well, yeah, I mean, I didn't like the last 2 minute and a half either. But if you're a random person watching that game, you don't have a rooting interest, you're thinking, oh, this game is unbelievable. There's drama. There's made shots and ones, turnovers, comebacks. And then, you know, being able to fortify ourselves and withstand the comeback and not completely blow it in overtime. One thing I remember from that game specifically that kind of helped us win is, you know, we go into the huddle after losing the lead. You know, it's tied 69 all. And I remember Jamie and I remember myself and Coach Lou, we just got this crazy positive energy and start clapping and yelling and saying, we're going to win this game. You know, let's go. Five minute game. And that's what it came down to. And, you know, it took another 5 minutes on top of that. Tyson's tip play was unreal. They tipped the ball to us and Tyson just turns around and goes and makes an and one right off the bat. Grant turns it over again, but then makes it up with an and one of his own. Crazy, crazy plays. I'm going to miss playing UConn. You know, Coach Early's got that team headed in the right direction, but I would gladly trade them out of the league in exchange for getting their point guard. I'm so excited to have Al Tariq. So I'm sure he won't like talking about that game as much as I like talking about it.
I was going to bring that up. Yeah. So that was an 89-86 double overtime win at UConn. Echenique had 19. Dexter and Eric Stevenson had 16 each. Shockers went 4-1 against UConn as conference opponents. So that's kind of a nice stat to have on your side. And yes, future, I guess, current Shocker, Al Tariq Gilbert had 14 points, 6 rebounds for UConn in that game. Tell us a little bit about Al Tariq. Did you go back and watch some of his clips?
I did. I was so excited to get Al Tariq. I mean, because I had seen him play against us, and I had scouted him, and I've watched his highlights, and I've watched games. And what I remember, especially the last 2 years when he really got to play a lot, when he played us, you know, he might have been the best guard on the floor. I mean, Jalen Adams was there and Vital was there, but, you know, he makes plays and he's got a burst to him that we kind of have been needing. He really can get by his defender and slice up the defense and make plays. Yeah, he's a pesky on-ball defender. He seems like a tough dude. You know, when they were struggling, the game we beat them on Samaje's buzzer beater, win number 300 that this whole list is based off of. He hit those two huge threes. I know we've talked about that. I can't wait to have him here. I think he's going to be, you know, maybe the truest point guard we've had in just a pure point guard view since maybe Fred. I mean, Landry was a great point guard, but he wasn't really a point guard. You know, we kind of had to make him into one. And you know, he's a little better served off the ball in the NBA. But I can't wait to have Al Tariq here. He's going to be good. If we have a season, you know, I hope we can even have a season next year. I have this bad feeling that we're not, but I don't know.
Yeah, let's not go there. And his reputation as a defender is pretty strong too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he heats up the ball, and he's able to stay in front while still getting a lot of on-ball pressure, both things that my dad's going to love. You know, it's going to make our practices more competitive. I think his what I really am excited to get to know him more is, you know, people that have covered him for UConn and their media, or people that have been around him, they just rave about the kind of character person that he is, how he's such a, you know, well-spoken and humble and hardworking and a leader. And those are all things that we welcome here and we need and are looking forward to having our program. So outside of all the things on the court, I think his impact as a person will be just as big, if not bigger. So that's another thing that gets me excited about him coming to join our program.
Well, if you paid attention at all to last season, you probably know Kellen's next game, final game. It was certainly a dramatic moment for the Shockers. Kellen, take it away.
The last game, you know, it's funny because this is, I almost call it my alma mater. I was set to go to school at SMU after high school. I went down to move in 2 days before school started. My dad and my mom helped me move in, super hot, in Dallas, Texas. I move in that night, go to dinner, go back, go to sleep, can't sleep at all. Can't believe, you know, what I'm doing. I'm thinking about all that I'm passing up, you know, Fred and Ron's senior year. And the next morning I decide not to enroll and come back to Wichita State, a decision that I'm very happy about, and has definitely enhanced my life. But you know, that game's very meaningful to me every year because it's like my alma mater. It's like this funny joke. And I want to beat them. And so far 3-0 in their building in my career as a staffer. This year's game took a lot more than the previous two in Moody Coliseum. I don't know what happened at the start. We had some mojo problems, and we had a very, very intense halftime talk. People were challenged. People were pushed when they probably didn't want to be pushed. If you watch The Last Dance, that's what MJ said. You know, I push people when they don't want to be pushed. I challenge when they don't want to be challenged. And we had a lot of that, and the guys banded together. It was really just six dudes who played in the second half, you know, Grant, Tyson, JB, Dex, Trey, and Jamie. And we rode it out, got down 24, and switched and started playing zone. And one thing that was really helpful was how SMU attacked our zone, because we had planned on maybe doing some zone because they're so hard to guard man-to-man. In space, you know, Kendrick Davis is so good in space and slicing up a defense. So the way we set our zone up to play, we had a point guard or the one guard at the top of the key, and the other kind of stayed in the high post area, kind of in the hole, as we call it. And we brought the two forwards up to more of a wing instead of being flat. And so it was kind of a matchup where you kind of got an area. And then Jamie, handled the middle. Well, they got in single spots, what we call our single spots, and basically put their players exactly where our guys were. So you have to credit Coach Cadino for the scout and for seeing that and how their zone offense didn't have a lot to it compared to their man offense, which is why we went zone, you know, and they went zone too. They went zone the whole game. So our guys did an incredible job communicating and moving as like an amoeba, you know, one of those like germs or parasites that just kind of morphs into whatever needs to be, you know. We morphed that defense as they moved around. They would come up and set a high pick and pop late with Isaiah Mike, and we were told to switch it, and they switched it every time. Just an incredible effort, a testament to, you know, the resolve of our guys. Tyson gets us going, and Grant hits some threes, and it was a homecoming for him. And of course, you know, Dexter just stole the show, 7 threes, 5 in the second half, I think. Absolutely pandemonium. There's a funny picture of me after the game, and it pretty much sums up how I was feeling. You can't put into words the rush that I felt, and I'm sure everybody else on the bench felt. I mean, it felt like we won the world championship. It was just incredible. and a game that likely will never be topped that I'll be on a team for, a 24-point deficit with 13 and change to go.
Shockers were down 50-26 with 14:48 to play. 17-0 run, got it down to four with about seven and a half minutes to go. Dexter Dennis, 25 points. He was 7-14 from three. Program's biggest comeback, and I think the question that popped around in a lot of people's brains, how do you compare that to the Missouri State comeback in Springfield?
Well, it's hard because, you know, the stakes for the Missouri State were higher in a sense. You know, being undefeated, there's high stakes. But at the same time, if we lose that game, there's no pressure on the tournament. You know, we're still a one or two seed. You know, who cares? But still, a lot of pressure. I think we got down 19 with 11 to go, something like that. I don't think you can top being down 24. You know, and they were in my ear, those students that are right next to our bench, and it was pretty satisfying. I mean, they couldn't believe it. I mean, it was to look around as they called their final timeout and we had just stolen the ball to go up four and go to the line or whatever. Tyson gets a steal and the game was all but over, but there's still time on the clock. I was outside of the huddle. I just looked at the people's faces in the stands and I couldn't believe it. It's like your favorite show gets canceled. You know, you're allergic to your favorite food, just some of the worst news you can imagine. That's not in a, you know, life or death sense. I mean, that's what these people's faces look like, and nothing really is better than getting that kind of road win. It's really unbeatable to me.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
It's over. It is over. Ladies and gentlemen, say it slowly and savor it. Wichita State is going to the Final Four for the first time in 48 years.
Unbelievable. What a scene, folks. The Shocker fans are just going crazy in the stands.
Just maybe the greatest win in the history of Wichita State basketball.